Welcome to the third day of the conference for the Association for Recorded Sound Collections. We have what I hope will be a very lively and informative and entertaining morning scheduled. First, two announcements. One, if there's anyone who has not registered for the banquet tonight and who wishes to do so, there is still room available, and you can make the necessary arrangements at the front desk. So if you'd like to join the banquet tonight, please see the folks at the front desk. Secondly, Don McCormick has produced a listing of all the participants at the conference by name and address, and you can pick up a copy of that so that you can further the contacts that you've made here this week at the front desk as well. Our first speaker this morning is Martin Williams, who wrote his first jazz reviews for his prep school newspaper. Considered one of the outstanding jazz critics in America, he has contributed to Saturday Review, Downbeat, New York Times, and of course many other journals. And he has published, and I'm sure this listing is out of date because I took it off the flyleaf of a book from the early 70s, The Art of Jazz, Jazz Panorama, Jazz Masters of New Orleans, Where's the Melody, and The Jazz Tradition, among other books. Formerly director of the jazz program at the Smithsonian Institute, he is presently acquisitions editor at the Smithsonian Institute Press. Martin Williams today will speak to us on Ellington and Moonglow, a complex tale of borrowing and more borrowing.
First of all, I'd like everybody to notice what time it is. You all know why I said that. Second, this is pretty lightweight what I'm going to do here, and I think you'll find it interesting and curious and provocative, maybe entertaining. But there are more serious implications in this, which I will leave largely to you, but I'll point out a few at the end. Everybody will now need to be reminded, I'm sure, of how Moonglow goes, because, you know, that's one of those melodies that you forget immediately. But I'm going to remind you anyway. But first of all, it was written in 1934, or appeared in 1934, credited to Will Hudson for the music and Eddie DeLange for the lyric. It was a hit for several people, chiefly Benny Goodman, and Duke Ellington also made a record of it. But to back up and to show you how it goes, well, you wouldn't expect me, if you know anything about me, to come up here and give you a straightforward reading of Moonglow that's going to stick to the text, would you? No. I'm going to play Art Tatum's late recording of it. But since Tatum is, his improvising is primarily ornamental and embellishmental, you will be reminded of how Moonglow goes. And if you want to go further than that, I would encourage you to. And when I say his playing is ornamental, and I mean in both hands, and for me, more richly in the left than the right. But here's Moonglow. Thank you. Hudson and Eddie DeLange were very prominent participants in the operation in the 30s known as Mills Music. And so was another gentleman named of Ellington, Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington. Now here from 2 years earlier is a first chorus of an Ellington recording titled Lazy Rhapsody. It has also been called, apparently, I don't know why, but I just see this in references, Swanee Rhapsody sometimes. Anyway, this is Lazy Rhapsody. Why don't we just leave it up and I'll... Sorry about that. Clearly, at least for the A strain of Moonglow, that is part of the melody and all the chord progression. The bridge is different. If Ellington had to say anything to say about Moonglow, it never became public as far as I know, and I've never heard any private comments quoted. There were some asides about it in his later years, but at the time, nothing at all. But we're not finished, because here, briefly, is a little interlude from another Ellington piece of the same year, a much more famous piece than Lazy Rhapsody. This comes from the first treatment that he did of It Don't Mean a Thing. This is a little interlude, which no one else ever does, has ever done that I know of in the piece, and which Ellington himself later dropped from the piece. But listen to it. There you have all of Moonglow except the bridge. The rest of the main melody is right there. Very curious. Even more curious is to jump again up to 1934 when Moonglow first appeared. Ellington recorded Moonglow, fully credited to Hudson and DeLange. But he wrote an interesting introduction for his treatment of Moonglow, and it goes like this. In 1939, on his second important trip to Europe, he was very well received in Sweden, and he wrote a piece which he calls Serenade to Sweden, which a lot of people feel is one of the minor Ellington masterpieces. Serenade to Sweden goes like this. Thank you. Well, a slight digression on my part. That's, to me, so typical of that man, because at a superficial listening, that sounds like a piece of mid-30s dance music, more or less like everybody else's mid-30s dance music. But if you look a little bit under the surface, there's a whole nother musical world going on there that no one else would ever dream of putting in a mid-30s dance music. At any rate, we're not quite through. There is a kind of borrowing back, if you will, on his part, borrowing from himself in this case, not from someone else. But we aren't quite through with the story, so let's go back again to the 1934 Ellington treatment of Moonglow. There is a coda on that performance, which goes like this. Here's the coda from a piece 6 years later, which was at first called a concerto for Cootie, Cootie being one of the stars, soloists of the orchestra. Cootie Williams, his real name was Charles. The piece was written for him. And the coda to that, this is, by almost everyone's agreement, one of the major masterpieces, and the coda to that goes like this. And here's another version of that, which shows you how improvisational the players in the Ellington Orchestra were free to be. This comes from an air shot the same year. It has to be the same year because the next year, Cootie Williams was gone out of the orchestra and therefore wouldn't be there to play it. But look how differently he played it. Wouldn't it be nice, as another aside, if our musicians who are determined to work Baroque concertos on original instruments with as much authenticity as they can muster would also learn to improvise, as the originals all did, not just the featured players. Okay, we really aren't through with the business of borrowing yet, because the main melody of that piece we just heard a fragment of became a popular song, somewhat simplified, from its version as a part of the Concerto for Cootie, and it was called Don't Get Around Much Anymore, and it became one of those things that, you know, Ellington thereafter was required to play almost every night before the people would let him out of the hall or off the stage or whatever.
Do nothing.
I'm sorry, right, Do Nothing Till, I've got, yeah, both from the, sorry, thank you. I'm sorry. Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. Okay, well, one point to tie this specifically to recordings is that if it were not for recordings, and if it were not for off-the-air recordings in a minor way, none of this would be known, because there are no, still, in spite of two serious efforts, there are no published versions of anything by Ellington yet. that are truly authentic. There have been some very serious recent efforts to get some, but they simply have mistakes in them still. It's very difficult to avoid mistakes in a musician of his caliber, when, particularly when the only way to put things on paper is to take them off recordings. And the density of his voicings make that difficult to begin with. But in spite of the several serious efforts recently, we still don't have anything. So as I say, if there weren't for records, we wouldn't know any of this, because there wouldn't be any Lazy Rhapsody, and there wouldn't be any Ellington treatment of Moonglow, and there wouldn't be any Concerto for Cootie, and there wouldn't be any Serenade to Sweden. Now, when everybody notice what time it is, I've finished. Unless you have a question or a comment. I could even take a negative comment, in spite of the hour of the morning, if anybody wants. I mean, if you want to call me a wise guy, it's okay. Yes.
One thing, and it just in the back of my mind, I could well be wrong. One of the loveliest Ellington pieces from that era is that dirge from that film, Symphony in Black. I thought I heard an element of Serenade to Sweden that might refer back to that. That tune has a title I have never heard of, and I haven't played on it.
It does. It's called Hymn of Sorrow. And there is a Smithsonian recording of it in stereo, transcribed from a record, I hope, accurately.
Well, I thought I might have heard of it.
Yeah. It is reminiscent, and there's another one that is also, and that is the piano section of the piece written for Elizabeth II, which is called The Queen's Suite. And the piano thing is called, the piano portion of that is called The Single Petal of a Rose, and that's reminiscent of this melody, too. Yes?
I have a question. 1956 was a great hit. The theme from Picnic was combined. Yeah. Do you know anything about the genesis of that? Why did that?
Yeah, I do. That's another interesting story that has to do with recordings, actually. That was done by the guy who wrote the film score for Picnic. And the counter melody that he wrote, ba-da-dee-da-da-da, sorry about that, but that, you know, the bridge is different. Interesting. So we get three bridges to the same essential piece over the years. But what happened there was an early example of play along. You know, what do you call it? Music minus one. On a 78, a 10-inch 78 that came out just toward the end of the Second World War. And it was a bunch of Hollywood musicians playing an accompaniment to Moonglow. And he heard it, and he wrote the counter melody on top of that record. And actually, the way Moonglow is played on the soundtrack is pretty close to the way that play-along record was done. And that's the real origin of that one. Is that right, Jerry? I see you nodding. Well, okay. They have a lot of terms for that kind of thing. Yeah, I forget what the 78 series was called. There were several of them. I think four sides I've heard, and one of them was Moonglow. And that's where George Dunning, I think it was, got the idea for the thing he did in Picnic. And actually, that's most people nowadays know Moonglow from that, so they don't know the bridge at all. Okay, it's 9:23. Thank you.
Martin will be back in a half an hour to MC the panel on Tin Pan Alley.